All right, welcome to week 7 here on AFC North Talk. I am Tony Serino. I will represent the Pittsburgh Steelers for today's show, joined by my three co-hosts. We'll start with Ace Boogie. You can find him on New Stripe City. Ace, how are you?
I'm doing pretty good, man. Doing pretty good. You know, not the best record, but I'm doing all right.
Hanging right in there, right to the end. Hanging right to the end every week. We also have Quincy Carrier. You can find him on YouTube by searching Quincy Carrier. Quincy, how are you?
You know, Ace, I love the intro, but I feel like one of them video got a change for that package right there. I feel like there's just a better pass there to put in that package. But we'll talk about that after the show goes off, because, you know, that's a nice touchdown that Baker Mayfield threw, but it wasn't the touchdown that Baker Mayfield threw. We'll talk about that later on.
Yeah, I'm not sure what you're referencing there, Quincy. Maybe we'll get to it later.
we'll definitely get to it.
Yeah, we'll get it. We might talk about it. We also have Sonny from SDG Sports. Sonny, how are you?
Yo, I'm excited not only to get this game review. I can't wait even for next show, because you know what's going on next week. Yeah. But hey, Ace, how's that petition to the move to the NFC East going?
It's not working, man. We tried to submit it last week. It was rejected. But you know, we'll see. Andy Dalton. Not going to say anything bad about Andy Dalton. Definitely prayers out to him. Hope that he comes back from that concussion. But, yeah, they wouldn't let us go in the division because of Andy Dalton, pretty much. That kind of blocked us up out of there.
I don't know if you guys heard. There was a lot of Steeler guys who were saying that Duck Hodges may be picked up by the Cowboys this week. So this may be my last week on AFC North Talk. I may be a Cowboys fan as of next week, depending on if my boy Duck ends up on the Dallas. No, he won't. All right, we got a lot to talk about today. Obviously, my Steelers go to 6-0. We'll talk about their win over the Tennessee Titans. We're also going to talk about our marquee matchup of the week between the Bengals and Browns. A close one at the end, as Quincy said, a comeback performance from Baker Mayfield. But let's start with the injury that happened in that game, Quincy, to Odell Beckham Jr., an ACL tear for Odell. He will miss the remainder of the season. There's even been questions about whether or not he's going to return to this team or not. Give me your thoughts on the OBJ injury.
Yeah, well, first of all, to answer that second part, Odell's definitely going to return to this team, in my opinion. I just don't see the value in trading him. Like, is the benefit of holding on to Odell and seeing if he comes back healthy better than getting a fourth or fifth round pick for a guy like Odell Beckham? I think that one works itself out. So him being hurt, honestly, makes it more likely that he stays than ever. But, you know, as far as him being out, what that's going to do to the team, you know, I'm not one of those that think, oh, Baker Mayfield not having Odell on the field was this magic elixir that turned him into rookie year Baker. I think that's clearly a causation, not a correlate. Well, a correlation, not a causation there. Because he threw four straight incompletions when Odell left the field originally. So it wasn't like Odell got off and then Baker just started taking off. Other things happened. But we'll talk about that later.
Yeah.
But Odell not being there, the main thing that hurts the Browns in is that they no longer have a deep threat. Their fastest wide receiver right now is Donovan Peoples-Jones, who runs about a 4.5. There's a lot of background noise coming in. I don't know where that's coming
from. Yeah, I was going to say that. But
yeah. Somebody like Donovan Peoples-Jones runs a 4.5 40, and you know that's not a burner right there in the NFL. So you're going to need somebody faster. I've been lobbying heavily on Twitter for the Browns to do a raid of the Bengals, essentially, and try to get Carlos Dunlap and John Ross off the hands of the Bengals, because now it's not even an in-division trade for the Bengals because they've already played us twice. These guys are on expiring deals. Why not get something out of them, especially John Ross, who's on his last year of his deal, because you're not going to give him a fifth-year option. So they need somebody to be a deep threat. Look for them to be in the market for Robbie Anderson, a Bashard Perriman, a John Ross. Look for fast guys on bad teams. That's who the Browns are going to be in the market for. They definitely need to do that, because they don't have that top-end speed. They don't have anybody who could take any of these end-arounds. You know, they need that in this offense. So that's definitely a need for them that they don't have without Odell Beckham. So that's a problem, but it's a solvable problem. The Browns are deep enough on offense. They got Jarvis Landry still, who hopefully can get more and more healthy every week. I like the upside of Rashard Higgins, the real Hollywood of the AFC North, has always been a nice option there for Baker Mayfield. Baker and him have tremendous chemistry. It showed in that Bengals game. And that's always been the case for Rashard Higgins with Baker Mayfield. So it's not like you're barren there. It's not like you have nothing. And then you always have Nick Chubb, who's going to be coming back. Wyatt Teller is going to be coming back in that run game, which is hopefully going to be coming back. So they're not in a desperate situation. They do need a couple of Band-Aids that I would like to get for cheap. And those Band-Aids are exactly who I mentioned, Breshad Perriman, who's been here before, or Donovan Peoples. I mean, not Donovan Peoples-Jones, John Ross III.
Yeah, it's certainly a big injury for this Browns team. Do you think it hurts their playoff chances at all? I mean, there's the 5-2 team right now. I think playoffs certainly on their mind, but how big of a setback can this be for this Browns team overall?
It hurts their chances in the playoffs. It does not hurt their chances to get to the playoffs.
Yeah, I think
I think any game that they could have won with Odell on this roster that they were going to depend on to win, like they probably need 5 games to get into the playoffs at this point. 10-6 is going to get you the 7th seed. I think you could win those 5 games without Odell Beckham because, again, you have that depth on the offense. It's just going to be against a team like Pittsburgh, against a team like Baltimore, against a team, you know, that has a better defense, or a team that you're going to have to keep pace with like Kansas City. Odell's going to be a huge piece that you would want. But unfortunately, you just don't have that. You're not going to have that. And that's going to become a factor later on in the season. Yeah. But for now, I think they'll be fine.
Yeah, it's a good point because remember, you know, that big win they had over the Cowboys, a shootout at the end. And who was the player that made the play at the end? It was OBJ on the end around making a big play at the end to seal that win. Do want to let everyone know, Super Chats are open. So if you want to have your question answered on the show, you can donate to the show through a Super Chat. We will read it here on the show. So that is open. Ace, want to get your take on OBJ's injury?
Well, I think it sucks for the Browns. I mean, obviously a player of OBJ's stature, anytime you lose a guy like that, it's always tough on that offense. We're going to have to see how they respond. I think Higgins, like Quincy said, definitely showed that he's more than capable of stepping into that role. And then Jarvis Landry, I think you got a well and capable guy over there. And then obviously we kind of saw, and we'll talk about that later, they have some other options there in the passing game. It just sucks, though. It sucks because this was going to be the season that you kind of thought that Odell Beckham Jr. was going to bounce back after facing so much adversity last season and so much criticism. You kind of thought that this was the time that he was going to kind of be able to put it together, especially with the Browns turning around with Stefanski and, you know, the shape that they're in. And it's just a shame that you're not going to be able to see that really fully play out. So I think it's a tough loss for him. I think I read something today that says that Odell Beckham Jr. is essentially guaranteed most of his money next year, which makes it hard to trade him or release him, which I would never release OBJ. That's just crazy. It's definitely a tough situation. And it just sucks, man. This is a guy that was the face of the league literally about 4 years ago, and he has just had so many injuries impact him and just so many things that have kind of railroaded his career. Still an amazing receiver, but is kind of going to be an issue, and I think I actually heard them talking about this locally on the radio, is he going to be one of those guys where his career doesn't end where it kind of started at? Like when he first came in and he blew up the league, we were just thinking that this guy was just going to completely, you know, take over the league. And, you know, injuries have kind of, in a sense, hurt him in that retrospect, even in not only in Cleveland, but in New York as well.
Yeah.
So I hope that he's able to come back and bounce back. But yeah, big loss for them for sure. But I think Quincy's right. If they can try to manage to bring in another receiver, I think they'll be pretty much good. I mean, Donovan Peoples-Jones, me and Quincy talked off air about him when I was talking about Harbaugh. He kind of talked about how he was able to get something out of him. Obviously, we saw what happened, but we'll get into that later. I think if they can go out and get another guy, I don't think that their offense is, you know, essentially depleted now. But, you know, I think that you could definitely bounce back from it.
It's a good point about Odell as far as where, you know, where he is and where he's going, right? The question being, like, did we ever get peak Odell, right? Yeah, it was 3 years in the Giants, and then, you know, the injury happens and he falls off and goes to Cleveland. Not say he was bad in Cleveland. He certainly was not a bad, but he never reached those heights. And will he ever get there again? Sonny, your thoughts on OBJ's injury?
I mean, it's unfortunate, right? You don't want a talented guy to go down. OBJ is been, like you guys said, it's been great throughout his career. He's been trying to get into the same page with Mayfield since he got, but I mean, I thought this year he's been playing better than, you know, previous years. Now, going back to what Quincy said, because I do agree with Quincy, the big problem with losing Odell, I agree with him, it won't lose you the ability of making the playoffs, especially with the 7th seed open this year. I still believe, I predicted earlier this year, beginning of the year, the Cleveland will make the playoffs. I still believe that. I don't think not having Odell will take that ability from them in the playoffs. It might, because he's a baller, right?
Yeah.
But who's that deep threat? A guy that I thought as soon as you know, the injury they said he's out for the year was Perriman. Perriman's a guy that played well for the Browns that 1 year, and he wanted to come back to the Browns, but then they traded for OBJ. He's like, well, I'm not going to get any snaps. Let me just bounce out. I think Perriman, because that's his specialty, go routes, right? Stretch the field, that's his specialty. I think he's definitely a good fit for the Browns because, yo, sorry, Ace, but your boys are probably asking for too much for any player, and they probably won't trade many players because they think if a guy is really value of a fifth, they're probably asking for a third. This is why they keep Dalton. This is why they don't get that many trades. They should trade them, but I don't think
for Carlos Dunlap now.
Yeah, yeah, especially top 10, yeah.
Even though Everson Griffin just went for a six, so yeah.
I know. So, but especially if you think about it, with the Browns, they're not gonna do them any favors, so they're probably gonna over ask with the Browns again. I think Perriman's a great solution. It's probably not gonna be very expensive. A fifth at most, probably more of a sixth round pick for Perriman, and I think that will keep Baker. And like I said, Baker and Perriman played fairly well. When they were together, and Perriman liked being in Cleveland, which again, Odell came in, so he went to Tampa. So I think that's a good move for the Browns, but losing OBJ, like Quincy said, I think Quincy hit in the spot. It won't make us not make the playoff. It will maybe hurt us in the playoff, depending what the chemistry is with the new receivers.
Yeah, it's a good point because it's an offense-driven league, and you know this is going to be about you know points scored in the playoffs and. Look, this is still a Browns team that relies so heavily on the run. You have to expect that Nick Chubb will come back and come back healthy. And so they will still have that two-headed monster at running back. But you guys are absolutely right about that. You know, the Odell's ability to take the top off of a defense, make a defense have to respect him, roll coverage his way, opens things up for guys underneath. Obviously, the Bengals weren't able to do that this week, but they're going to be better teams they'll play in the future that will. And like you guys said, I think the Browns make the playoffs. I don't think there's any question about that with seven. They already have five wins. But that, you know, the playoff run that they could potentially make may be stunted by their ability or their lack of ability to get big plays and score points in the playoffs. All right, let's move on here. Let's talk my Pittsburgh Steelers. They took on the Tennessee Titans 5-0 versus 5-0. I'll get you guys to take first before I give you my thoughts on the game. We'll just say the same word here. We'll start with Ace. Ace, give me your thoughts on Steelers Titans.
It was a weird game. It was a weird game for me. Like, obviously, with this being on at the same time as the Bengals game, I wasn't able to pay attention, but I was still somewhat interested in that game. And I saw the Steelers hopped out early, and I was like, oh, this is going to get ugly. It's going to be bad when we come here on the AFC North talk and have to hear Tony. But as you guys know, I kind of picked the Steelers to win this game as much as, you know, I didn't want to, I had to, based off of what I saw there. But the interesting thing was, the Steelers completely hopped out on these guys, and then their offense just completely died. In the second half, I was shocked to see that they only were able to score 3 points, and it kind of had me scratching my head because every time we watch the Steelers, they play an amazing moment or an amazing half of football, and then the next half is like the complete opposite, and we definitely saw that. And then I also noticed – we talked about Ben only had one interception. This is the one where it was like, you get a pick, you get a pick, all of you guys get a pick. And he finally had the Ben meltdown game. But even having that game and not scoring that much in the second half, they were still able to pull it off. The Titans, they just really couldn't stop the Steelers on third down. For me, A.J. Brown went crazy. I don't know what happened there in the Steelers secondary. Maybe you guys can elaborate. But then Deontay Johnson, this guy, I think we talked about him on here. Appearing to be AB-like, definitely left his imprint on this game. And, yeah, Ben finally had his pick party. But yeah. Outside of that, Steelers still win 27-24. So it's going to get interesting.
Steelers are now 6-0. Sonny, they will take on your 5-1 Baltimore Ravens next week. Give me your thoughts on the Steeler win.
So I watched this game throughout the whole game. Since the original Ravens game, I watched the whole thing. And after the first half, I'm like, this game is done, man. Tennessee can do crap. I mean, it felt like I was watching the Ravens against the Eagles in that first half, right? Like literally it was pressure. There was no sight of Henry. Henry at halftime had him broken a sweat because he was barely carrying the ball. Everything was negative or maybe just barely positive yards. It was just Steelers domination throughout. Big Ben Fairley looking pretty good in the first half. And then the second half happened. And how that first half ended, it was very telling. The Steelers, all they needed to do was a short pass, field goal range, take the three, let's go. Big Ben throws a horrible, it wasn't even bad, it's horrific pass at the back of the end zone for a pick. Like it was as easy as a pick. I think it was a safety that got the pick for Tennessee.
Yeah,
very easy pick. The second pick wasn't on Ben. I mean, that was a tip ball pick. And I tip
balls, you can put on the quarterback sometimes. Throwing lanes, you know, throwing lane stuff, and you can kind of put it on the quarterback.
Thank you, Tony. Me and you have such an agreement on that.
That's why Tony's the best Steelers fan, because he's not delusional. He's like realistic about certain stuff.
Yeah, you can put some of those on the quarterback. I mean, they're unlucky than when it gets intercepted, but tip balls, you know, are somewhat on the quarterback for sure. True,
but that is more forgivable than the third pick. Again, that third one for me, I was like, what are you doing? Why? A horrible pass again. It wasn't like, I think every Tennessee Titan defender was near that ball and one Steeler guy. It was just bad. Big Ben, I tweeted this throughout the game. I was like, the only reason Tennessee is in this game is because Big Ben. Big Ben led them back in. The defense was balling for the most part until in the second half they forgot how to take angles and tackle people. AJ Brown wasn't like he was beating them very deep that much. It wasn't like he was crushing a route that made him wide open. It was just simple passes. And then AJ was like, there's a Steeler guy. There's just, oh man, he took a bad angle. Oh, there's a missed tackle. Let me keep running. Oh, look at that. Big touchdown. It wasn't like he was doing anything that you're like, oh my God, that's so impressive. Right. I felt like it was the Steelers taking bad angles and bad tackling that just, you know, and make for Tennessee having big plays. But again, even with that, if Big Ben doesn't throw those two picks and you bring them the 6 points at least, mm-hmm. you're talking about a different game. It was lucky that the guy, I never can pronounce the guy's, the kicker's name, the guy that from New England, he missed the field goal. I thought he was going to make it, right? Like, he throws in, like, if he makes it, they're going to win because they have all the momentum, right? They've just been trolling back, but no. And it wasn't because of the D-line, by the way. The D-line kept putting pressure on Tannehill. It wasn't in that second half that D-line kept putting pressure. The secondary, it had issues, but it wasn't the D-line and the pressure. The pressure was there. Tannehill was making not as spectacular throws, but good enough throws, and the receivers were just making plays. So
yeah, it's something. Now, something we talked about last week, Tannehill being so good under pressure. He actually had the best numbers in football under pressure for the first 5 weeks of the year. All right, we got a couple super chats I want to get to before we get to Quincy's take. Firstly, Matty Bond writes in, question, read the Jets want a second for Quinnen Williams. Should Barry move, or what about going to the Giants and offering a second and a third for Peppers?
I guess
Straight up, OBJ.
Bring Peppers back.
Straight up, OBJ for Peppers. Who says no?
Okay. The Quinnen Williams thing. Second for Quinnen Williams, not for the Browns. The Browns do need help on the defensive line, but are they that desperate they need to give a second for Quinnen Williams when they definitely have secondary issues they could use that second round pick on next year? Nah, I don't think so. Did you drill Peppers for a second and a third?
Second or third. Second or third.
Okay. I thought they were offering both. I was like, what?
Bring Pepper home.
Save Peppers.
Yeah, I see. I like the idea of Jabril Peppers. On paper, it makes it like it's a fit. But I've seen him play free safety in Cleveland, and he's not a good free safety. And he doesn't make great decisions. And Sadejo, hey, flawed as Sadejo is, he makes sound decisions. He's just not athletic enough to get there. Jabril Peppers is
strong. I thought he played strong.
He played strong, but he played a lot of free under Greg Williams in Cleveland, where he was the angel player. He was not much of an angel, by the way. He would be 15 yards back and still get beat deep. That was his rookie year. Let me be fair to Jabril on that point. He might have developed from this point on, but I've just seen him play free safety. I'm not impressed with the sample size. I'm not going to trade for that. It's just a lose. It's not a great situation there. And it's not a great market to find safety help and through the trade market. Because as Pittsburgh fans know, these safeties are expensive. Like, safeties are not cheap on this market anymore. Minkah Fitzpatrick cost a first round pick. You know, yeah, Jamal Adams, how much did he cost?
Yeah,
if you want a good safety, Eric Murray, who was a bum in Cleveland last year, signed with the Houston Texans on a 3-year, $15 million deal. These guys are expensive. Yeah, now it was Bill O'Brien, but still, these guys have an overinflated value. And it's just hard to acquire these guys.
I see. Bill O'Brien. I was just going to say Justin Reed is pretty good. I like Justin Reed coming out of college, and he's on the Texans, but Bill O'Brien no longer the general manager there, so you couldn't get as good a deal.
Reed is not Justin Reed. He's not fast enough. He's not going to fix any of the problems that's today. It's just not a great market to fix that issue. Yeah. So, you know, I don't know what they do here. And no, the Steelers ain't going 16-0.
All right, we do have this question. Will the Steelers go 16-0? The answer to that question is no. Now, I will say this, and we'll probably talk more about this on Thursday. If the Steelers win on Sunday against Baltimore, you're going to hear a lot more about this. It's still dumb. No, they're not. Even if they win on Sunday, they're not going 16-0. But the seeds are already being planted for these articles in Pittsburgh. I'm already seeing journalists in Pittsburgh tweeting about this as if they are preparing these articles to be written. You will hear a lot more about this if they beat Baltimore, but it's a long way to go. They got to beat Baltimore in Baltimore. We'll see. We shall see. 16-0 would be very funny, though.
All right, but now getting into what I thought about the game. Yeah. I recently watched this game because I was like, how in the world did Pittsburgh almost lose this one? Because like I had predicted like, yo, Pittsburgh's going to run through them. You know, I think they were going to win by multiple scores. And it looked like that. I even think I jinxed it to Tony because I messaged him halfway through the game. Was like, yeah, it looks like my blowout counter is undefeated. It's not undefeated. So with this game, what I saw was this team, Pittsburgh, kind of coming off the heels of what they did last week to the Cleveland Browns, playing as hot as they could on both sides of the ball, absolutely on fire to start. I mean, like, they got to a 27-7 lead at one point in this game early on. And then I saw some of these seeds go on in the first half, but they didn't really get punished in the first half, where Ben was just being uncharacteristically relative to this season, careless with that football. There was the one play where he did the Brandon Whedon back arm like chuck to the ball that like Eric Ebron happened to catch in the red zone. That was dangerous.
Dangerous.
He had another one. Yeah, good. It's only good because he caught it. Yeah. If it
no, there's returned. Another. You're talking about the other one. The one to Connor that he threw backwards was
that really one dangerous. Was really dangerous. Yeah, that one too. And I was like, ooh, he's getting a little careless. He's getting a little Carson Wentz with this football here. And I saw it the second he fit that ball into that like real tight angle. It was a touchdown to Deontay Johnson. You could see it in his eyes where he was like, I'm back. I'm Ben. I can throw this thing anywhere I want it. And you can see it. And that's where it just started hitting him with these interceptions later on, where he kind of took the safety off. Because I think he had been a little cautious with like, hey, I don't know if I can fit into these windows. Let me be more cautious with this elbow. Let me see where I'm at. And then he did a dot right there in the end zone. I felt like he was like, I'm back. I'm Ben. And then he started doing things that Ben does. Good things. And bad things that Ben does. Now, the good has always outweighed the bad, and that's why Pittsburgh won this game. But, you know, the bad things are still there with Ben, and that's why Tennessee was able to get back in here. The one thing, we talked about Minkah Fitzpatrick off air, just taking some bad angles on some plays here, not being the same impactful safety that he was last year, where he was, you know, arguably the best safety in football to Tony, inarguably, because he was number one all pro.
He was all pro. Yeah, that means the best safety.
First team all pro. Yeah. So, but this year, he's definitely not playing at an all pro level. He barely at a Pro Bowl level, honestly. So that's been an issue. Also, Mapletron did not have one of those games. He had the one call where he got the pass interference to help them move downfield. But I think other than that, he really didn't do much to help this team out here. And for somebody who had as hot of a six-quarter run that he had there, that was a little bit disappointing there. You got Deontay Johnson. You still got depth there. But I think him not being able to kind of take over top and do the things that he did against Cleveland and against Philadelphia were problematic for this team. And I don't know whether that's on Ben or whether that's on Chase at this point. So I'll reserve judgment. All in all, Pittsburgh 6-0. They're a really good team. They're going to be one of the top teams in the AFC. This is kind of the Ravens argument. I think they're peaking right now. on both sides of the ball, or not on both sides. I think on the offensive side of the ball, they're starting to peak a little bit. On defense, they're starting to get to that peak. The run defense is incredible. I wonder what they're going to look like at the end of the season. Are they going to still be playing at this level? But it's going to be a very interesting game to see if they come in to Baltimore and win that game on the road, I believe, because one, I need Baltimore to win that game. I'm not buying a Steeler jersey. And two, if they do win that game against Baltimore, I mean, like, this division is already kind of crazy, but you're looking at a situation realistically where, like, the third place team could be 12-4 or 13-3. Like, realistically, that is a possibility. Which is going to be a heck of a talking point when you look at the NFC East, who's probably going to send somebody who's 6-10 to the playoffs this year.
Yeah, at 6-10, I mean, 7-9 at best, 7-9 for the NFC. Yeah, no, it's interesting. Like, you talk about how good are the Steelers this year. You know, Bill Parcells once said, "You are what your record says you are." And for the Steelers, they're the only undefeated team left. They're the best team in football right now. This game is interesting. It played out the opposite of how I thought it would, right? I was the only one on this show last week. Thank you to everyone who picked the Steelers here. Made me look bad. I was the only one who predicted the Titans to win because I thought the Titans would come out and start fast and the Steelers would come out slow and have to claw their way back in late, right? I thought this would play basically the exact opposite of how it did. But credit to Mike Tomlin on this one, because this game started with a long drive with that Steeler offense. They punched it in for a touchdown. And they did that because they first of all, they won the toss and they elected to receive, not to defer. Tomlin wanted this offense to start. This is an offense that had not scored an opening drive touchdown in 24 straight games. That's a season and a half of not scoring an opening drive touchdown. And yet Tomlin felt comfortable enough with Ben Roethlisberger and this offense and how it had been playing to start off against this Titans defense, which has some holes to it, no doubt about it, and have the Titans play from behind and not the Steelers be playing from behind. It's a great gamble that Tomlin made. It worked out for him. And I think one of the reasons why, you know, he was so confident, not just because Ben had been playing so well going into this game, Claypool had been playing so well, because this offense got back Deontay Johnson. And Deontay Johnson, as I talked about earlier in the year, he was their number one receiver. He was the number one target in weeks one and two. Then he got hurt. And him coming back into this offense was so important because he really embodies what this offense wants to be, right? He is a very good run after catch guy, very good route runner. And this offense wants to be that quick strike, you know, catch and run type of offense. So his run after catch is so useful to this offense. And you saw that in this game, the two touchdowns that he had. The one was a nice catch over the middle, you know, a nice little juke there to make the linebacker miss. And it was an easy touchdown for Deontay. And then the other thing you saw in this game, you talk about Claypool not having a big game, but, you know, what did that bring to the Steeler offense? I guess Claypool, yes, I agree. You know, he was silent in this game. You saw the Titans have to respect Claypool. Malcolm Butler was covering Claypool on a lot of these reps. And when defenses are going to start to do that now, they're going to start to shift coverage towards Claypool, put their better corners on Claypool because of the size mismatch that he presents. That's going to open things up for Deontay and Juju. And you saw Juju and Deontay have their best games. Both of them, I think, had 9 receptions. Deontay with 15 targets, Juju with 14. So if that starts to happen, then you start to open things up. We talk about, you know, these pick your poison type of offenses with so many weapons. Well, the Steelers, look, you know, I don't know if they're pick your poison at this point, but they certainly have a lot of guys that present interesting mismatches at some positions. And it allows for them, like last week, you know, it was James Washington who had the double move, right? And he had a big game last week. And this week it's Deontay and Juju. And next week we'll see, right, what happens. But you know, there's two ways really to look at this game, though, right? Because, like, you guys talked about it. Hey, the Steelers should have blown them out. And certainly they definitely, I mean, it's 27-7. By Ben Baldwin's win probability model, they had a 95% chance of winning the game at that point. And yet, at the end of this, I'm watching Gostkowski kick a 46-yarder to send it to overtime, right? Because, you know, the other way of looking at this game, though, is to say they should have lost, right? The Pittsburgh Steelers should have lost this football game, because when you go into an undefeated Tennessee and you turn the ball over 3 times and you don't get a turnover yourself, well, your win probability drops immensely, right? Teams that lose the turnover battle 3-0 have a 10% win probability. So, you know, those turnovers that you guys talked about, they were absolutely the difference maker in the game. Now, I do want to talk about Ben Roethlisberger's interceptions, though, because you guys all criticized Ben's third interception, which is the one to me that I will not criticize. That's the one I live with. That's the one. And you guys know me. I love criticizing Ben and his picks. Go back to week two, right? I killed him for the first one he had. But that interception to me, I don't hate it. I love, in fact, I love that play. I wish it was a better ball that he threw, which is a little higher. But give credit to Jayon Brown. Look, what Ben saw on that play was a too high look, right? Split safety coverage. And he's got Juju running down the seam covered by a linebacker. Now, if he throws that ball and it's a touchdown, the game is over. It's you know, 10-point lead, game, set, match. But I want my quarterback against a too high look to throw to Juju down the seam in a, you know, covered by a linebacker every time. So, you know, give credit to Jayon Brown for making a play, but I'm not going to criticize Ben for the throw or even the decision there. Where I am going to criticize Ben, and not even Ben, I'm going to criticize because I don't know who made this call. Whether it was Ben, whether it was Fichtner, whether it was Tomlin, whoever made this decision to run four verts at the end of the first half, like Sonny talked about, when they were in just borderline field goal range. And they decide to run four verts and not something underneath. This is a catch and run, as I just said. This is a catch and run offense. You have Deontay Johnson. Your bread and butter is getting 5 to 7 yards a play. You know, get up there and then clock the ball. No, instead we're going to run four verts here. By the way, we're not just going to run four verts. We're gonna toss it up to Deontay Johnson, not Chase Claypool. I don't understand that play whatsoever. That is one that boggles my mind. That's 3 points just immediately taken off the board, or the possibility of 3 points taken off the board. It's so stupid. That's the one that kills me. That's the one. The third one, I don't mind so much. Now, you know, defensively, we knew they were going to take care of Derrick Henry, and they did that in this game. But the problem here was going to be, how do you stop Tannehill? How do you shut down the passing attack? I thought they did a decent job, right? Credit to Tannehill for, you know, staying in there. He never wilted under the pressure. He was clearly affected by the pressure early in this football game. They were off. That whole offense was out of sync, right? But you know, he never wilted. He never threw a pick, never fumbled in this game. TJ Watt had the one where he smacked the ball and, you know, didn't drop it. I give credit to Tannehill for this game because he, you know, again, this is the first time the Steelers have not had a turnover on defense since Thursday Night Football against Cleveland last year, right? This defense prides itself in being able to turn the ball over. They just didn't do it today or on Sunday. The other thing that they're doing too much this year, you guys hit on this with the Minka stuff, too many big plays. Wait, for a defense this good, make offenses beat you. Make offenses drive down the field, long drives, you know, sustained drives. When they're giving up these 75-yard plays like they did to A.J. Green or A.J. Brown, and they did a couple weeks ago to Miles Sanders, too easy for offenses. And they've done that now. It's the fourth 40-yard play that this offense has given, or this defense has given up. They gave up five all of last year. Five all of last year, four already through six games. That's not good enough for a defense that wants to be, considers itself to be one of the best in the league. So I'm not going to criticize the defense as a whole. Obviously, you know, the front seven is still playing at a tremendous level. They shut down Derrick Henry. They got pressure on Tannehill. But as I said, I think there are still things to clean up in this secondary. I do want to talk, last thing here, do want to talk about the biggest play of the game. It's not on a stat sheet. You're not going to see it on Tuitt's stat sheet, but I thought Stephon Tuitt had the play of the game. It's late in the game. Tennessee has the ball, 1 minute to go. First and 10 on the Steelers' 25-yard line. Now, at this point, if the Titans line up for a field goal, it's a 42-yard field goal from here. Right? And that's if you hold them to 0 yards. If the Titans got no more yards, it'd be 42-yarder from there. Now, if they get any more yards, obviously it's going to be a chip shot at that point. On first and 10, the Steelers run press man. Tuitt gets pressure on Tannehill. Tannehill has to throw the ball away. It gets called for intentional grounding. Now, it's not going to go down as a sack for Tuitt, but it is a gigantic play because it's a 10-yard penalty that takes what was a 42-yard field goal now back to a 52-yard field goal. The Titans would end up getting 6 yards on the next play, end up kicking a 46-yard field goal. You know, that's a huge difference. I know 42 to 46-yard field goal doesn't sound very different, but if you look at on average in NFL kickers, a 46-yard field goal is made 73% of the time, a 42-yard field goal made 81% of the time. So an 8% difference there. And let's imagine they had gotten that 6 yards without the pass interference. Well, then we're talking about a 36-yard field goal, which is made 87% of the time. That's a 14% difference in field goal percentage by Stephon Tuitt getting that pressure on Tannehill late, forcing him into that intentional grounding. So credit to the defense once again coming up big in those big moments. You know, I think that's why this team is winning games. They're finding ways to win. They're not winning pretty. They won pretty against Cleveland, but they won late against Philly. They won late against Denver. They win late again here against the Tennessee Titans. But you know, credit to them because they're 6-0 and they got a big game. Big game.
Real quick, we got a super chat from the Trib One. Oh, also. We got like 200 plus people right now watching live. So if you're watching live right now, please hit that like button, hit that subscribe button, ding the notification bell to show that you really, really love us. Do you really love us like that? I don't know. Y'all ain't hitting the like button because I only see 39 likes. Hit the like button. 200 of y'all in here. Hit that like button. But this question comes from the Trib, or this super chat comes from the Trib. He says, I'm late AF. He says, the Steelers scaring me as a Ravens fan. Browns aren't. Bengals aren't. Tony needs to believe in his Steelers. I do. Smiley face. Feel bad for OBJ.
Yeah, I don't want it to sound like I don't obviously I believe in this team, right? I mean, I think for me, the interceptions that Ben threw, the only one that I'm really upset with is the first one. The second one, look, throwing lanes are a thing, as I said, and that is on Ben to some extent, but it's a little unfortunate that it got tipped up intercepted. Now, I would say the same thing about that third interception. It's a good throw by Ben. It's a good decision by Ben. I just wish, you know, Juju had made a play on the ball. I guess he did make a play on the ball, but you know, I just give credit to the linebacker there because he tipped the ball up. The safety came over and made a play. I live with that one. Look, the Steelers right now, they're playing great football. Don't get me wrong here. There are things to work on. This is a work in progress for a football team. But I don't want anyone to think I'm not excited about where the Steelers are at 6-0. They're fantastic. All right, let's move on. Let's talk about our marquee matchup in the AFC North, the rematch. Baker Mayfield against Joe Burrow. Bengals Browns round two. This is a close one before 35-30, a one score game. Could the Bengals upset the Browns? As I said last week, for science, for not to be a hater on the Browns, but for science purposes, I would have liked to see the Bengals pull this one off to see maybe if they would bench Baker. Now, Quincy, I said last week that Baker Mayfield's peak may be someone like Jimmy Garoppolo or Jared Goff, someone who you just can't win with. You have to win in spite of him. I don't know if Baker listened to this podcast, but he played like he was trying to prove me wrong.
Try it. All right. Are we starting off with me?
I guess. Yeah, go for it.
And look, at the beginning of this game, in the first quarter, I bet Ace and them was having a ball. Baker Mayfield was 0-for-5, had more interceptions than completions and yards. Oh, they was having a ball. They was up by like 10. They're like, we got to beat the Browns at home. Joe Burrow looking like, Joe Burrow out here playing good through the one bad interception in the red zone, but came back from that. You're like, yeah, we got the better quarterback. We got the better, we got the better future. The Browns really in purgatory. People in Cleveland were losing their mind. They've been losing their mind all week after that Steeler game, talking about some Case Keenum, baby. It's time for KK Keenum. And I was like, nah, we're not about to do that. Case Keenum's not going to save you. Case Keenum's not going to save you. And then, In the middle of the second quarter, I'm pretty sure Bengals fans just heard like random thumping out of nowhere. This boom, boom, boom. And I think Joe Burrow looked to the left, looked to the right, looked at Darius Phillips, and Darius Phillips was like, yo, why do y'all hear boss music right now? Because that's what happened. Boss man Baker came out the womb. I don't know where this has been at all season. I don't know what's been going on. But that was what? Yo, he went 23 straight. 23 straight. He had the one spike, but he went 23 straight. 23 straight completions. Five. I told y'all about Baker Mayfield in the red zone. Ace, how many times did he get into the red zone?
I lost count.
Four times. How many times did he have a touchdown in red zone? Four times. Red zone Baker, one of the best red zone quarterbacks in the NFL officially now, is what, 13-0 in the red zone when he gets there? Again, what Baker Mayfield does well. I felt like so many people focus on what he did poorly in Pittsburgh. We forget what he can do well. He can do a lot of these things well, especially when you get him in the red zone, especially when you get him in rhythm. He can be really accurate, really deadly. And this is the first time since 2018 that I've seen him just feel comfortable with pulling the trigger. Now, some people are going to equate that to, oh, Odell wasn't in there, so somehow that makes him more comfortable throwing the ball downfield. I don't know what it was. I felt like this has been a gradual progression of Baker Mayfield finding comfort in the pocket and not bailing late when he has a clean pocket. If you watch all of the games before, he has had an issue bailing from a clean pocket. I think in Indy, he didn't do that, but the pressure got to him. In Pittsburgh, he didn't do that, and that's why he got sacked so much. But I like that he stuck with it, even though he had those two rough experiences. And then it finally paid off because the Browns were able to hold up protection-wise against Cincinnati. And if you watch those highlights, if you watch that game, there's very little of Baker Mayfield breaking the pocket to try to make a throw on the side. This is Baker Mayfield staying in there, staying calm, and doing the things he hasn't done since 2018, hitting the seams deep. Like, none of these 23 straight completions were like, there were like a couple of screens mixed in there, but all of these were mostly downfield throws, tough, tight window throws. Like, this was not just like Jimmy Garoppolo getting lucky for 23 straight completions. This was a dude balling at a high, high level, especially in that fourth quarter. And look, I thought this game was over. You know, when Sudejo gave up that touchdown, when the Browns, look, let me say one thing. I got to complain about the defensive line real quick. Defensive line was awful. Outside of Myles Garrett, and by the way, God bless Myles Garrett, because he's out here Euro-stepping double teams in the NFL and still sacking Joe Burrow twice. Like, if you watch that one second, did you see that? He Euro-stepped both the guard and the tackle and just got to Joe and then, like, ducked underneath a running back. That's a triple team. Myles is getting three heads each play. That means everybody's getting one-on-one on the other side, and they can't win. And I'm sorry, Olivier Vernon. Dog, you can pay $12 million a year. You got to win a one-on-one matchup against Bobby Hart's backup. You can't beat his the dude who's not good enough to unseat Bobby Hart. Bobby Hart. Like, this dude goes to the club and tells people, I back up Bobby Hart. You cannot beat that man one-on-one with no help. No help, nothing whatsoever. They're literally rolling to your side in fear of Myles Garrett. Like, they're doing every way to come to you, and you can't just get Bobby Hart's backup off you for a couple plays. No, you get no pressure. You let them get to your 2-yard line, and then you let them score with 1 minute. You got no timeouts left. I'm the biggest Browns fan in the world. I'm somebody who believes in Baker Mayfield still. And I looked at that scenario like, yo, we just went 4-3. This is going to be a tough week. Like, I don't see how they come back. And then Baker Mayfield just pulled it out. Like, I don't know how else to describe this. Like, if there was a better explanation, I would try to tell you, but he made a great play staying alive. When he got grabbed down by, I forget who, but Carl Lawson grabbed him by one leg. He made the Patrick Mahomes one-legged throw for 10 yards to Donovan Peoples-Jones. And then he had the deep ball to Rashard Higgins, where he just gave his wide receiver a chance one-on-one, something we've been begging him to do for a while. Finally did it. Hit it there, and then the throw to Donovan Peoples-Jones. Like, one, why were the Bengals in a cover one robbery?
We'll talk about that.
I don't know why they thought that was appropriate, but Baker did what he needed to do. He saw Jesse Bates was on the absolute wrong hash, too, by the way. Like, he was out there, like, hedging towards Rashard Higgins, who runs a 4.7. Like, that was going to do anything. So he hedged towards the wrong hash. Baker sees that and goes back shoulder. Beautiful throw. Beautiful catch to Donovan Peoples-Jones to win this game in 11 seconds and really save the career of Andrew Sudejo, who would have been the GOAT this week if Baker did not be heroic at the end of that. And, you know, that's something we've been waiting to see out of Baker Mayfield was, hey, 1 minute left, get it done, kid. The kind of franchise quarterback stuff. And this was a step. I'm not going to say he's there yet. I'm not going to magically crown Baker Mayfield yet. I understand it was one game. And, you know, people are going to say it was the Bengals, but it was one game in the NFL. You need to put that together more consistently, no matter who you play. If this was a game against the Steelers or the Bank or the Ravens and he did this, I would still say, hey, he has to do that more consistently for me to be head over heels in love with it. But I felt like Baker did what he had to do and played when the Browns required Baker Mayfield to carry them, when the Browns required Baker Mayfield to essentially play the game of his life in order to win this football game, Baker responded. And that doesn't mean anything. That doesn't mean nothing. That's significant. I mean, I hope that carries over. But we got a couple super chats that we want to get to, right?
Yeah. Yeah. We have one here from Jossie who writes in, hey, guys, just want to say this is a great channel. Much love from the UK. Hey, Sonny, you got a.
Yeah. Look at that. You see? More press in the UK.
It's okay. He's a Browns fan.
are all Browns fans like secret Ravens fans too? Right? Because, like, you know what I mean? Like,
no.
Didn't everyone come from the Browns?
Nobody did that move. Come on.
We'll get there eventually. All right. This is a question for you, Q. Do you think Baker is going to carry this confidence into the Raiders game? Myles is king. Go Browns.
I think the Browns are going to need him to. I think this is more of a result of Baker finally stepping up and finding his passing lanes in the pocket. That's what this was, right? Because I've been watching the tape. I watched it even last week. I told you guys, like, it was there. He just wasn't confident in it. He wasn't stepping up. He wasn't finding his lanes, and that's where he gets in trouble. And in this week, that's what's encouraging about it is that he finally did that. It looked like he was, like, steps away, and I was worried that 2019 took a lot of that confidence in his offensive line away, that he wasn't going to be able to do that. But it looked like a lot of that came back this week, and I hope that continues on for the rest of the season. The only reason it does give me some confidence is even when he was getting tore apart against Indy and especially in Pittsburgh, he did not waver from stepping up in the pocket just a little bit more. He just wasn't ready to pull the trigger. He was afraid somebody's going to hit him and knock the ball loose. This time, he was fully confident in his offensive line, and he let it loose, and good things happened.
All right, we got one more here from Marcus, who writes in, with Baltimore taking all the available players Cleveland needs, Yannick and Dez. I love that Dez Bryant is like a
name. Dez Bryant, he's on a practice squad.
I'm not sure Dez.
You can pick him up.
The Browns can get him if they want him.
Yeah.
The Browns can get him if they wanted Dez.
Yeah, yeah. They're not going to. Is there anybody on Cleveland's roster that can make up for OBJ's absence? I think he's asking about Taywan Taylor. Is that his name?
God, Taywan Taylor ain't going to make up for no Odell Beckham's absence.
Donovan Peoples-Jones. Donovan
PPJ.
No, it's going to take a committee to make up for Odell, right? You're going to have Rashard Higgins to kind of make up for some of that outside short stuff, that short to intermediate stuff that Odell can get really well, which I'm fine with that replacement. Donovan Peoples-Jones is going to kind of, for now, he's going to have to get the deep stuff, but I would hope they get a better solution than that. Not that I don't like Donovan Peoples-Jones. I think he can be a good threat when you get closer to the red zone, but for the 20-yard stuff, I would like somebody a little bit faster and a little bit better to take advantage of some of these play-action looks that they're going to get. And then you got your tight ends and you got Kareem Hunt once Nick Chubb comes back to be a factor in there. So you got options. I think they're missing the one piece, which is a really fast dude who can run straight in line. That's really what they need right now.
Yeah.
And that can make up what you are missing from Odell in the committee. And again, that's going to work in the regular season, much like in basketball, the committee stuff works in the regular season. In the playoffs, you kind of need that one guy to do all those things. And that's where I'm more worried about it.
Yo, don't worry. You don't have nothing to worry about because, listen, Ryan Switzer's on the practice squad. So if nothing else, they call him up and you're good to go.
I forgot about Switzer.
You're good to go. All right, we got another super chat here from Codex. Sonny, how confident are you with the Ravens versus the Steelers after a bye? Should we worry about the L? Oh, should we worry about
L Freaky? L Freaky, come on,
L Freaky, which I'm guessing is Lamar Jackson. Yes.
Yeah.
I'm not up to speed with my
nickname. No. That nickname is DOA.
I'm not up to speed with my Lamar Jackson lingo.
Shout out to Kodak, but that's a terrible nickname.
Limited video off of that.
Are you trying to make the stream cannot exist on other platforms that nickname would be appropriate on? All right.
Ingram calls him that. That's why he's putting it like that. Mark Ingram calls him that. Anyway, so Harbaugh is 11-2 coming out of a bye historically. The Ravens are excellent coming out of a bye week. Am I worried? Hell no, I'm worried. But I'm going to talk about that Thursday. We're going to talk about that Thursday. The Steelers are a great team, right? So it's definitely – we're not talking here about pushover. But, hey, we got this. Codex, we got this.
All right.
By the way, a little update on the like situation here. 240 people watching live now. That's a great number. 107 likes. It's a little bit better, but we're still 140 behind.
It's so like
button. Like button, people.
While you're down there, subscribe, be notified so you don't miss a stream. I saw some of you guys commenting that you were late. If you had the notifications on, baby, you wouldn't be late.
Facts. There you go.
All right, Ace, let's hear your thoughts on this game. It was a weird one, a wild one. Burrow played well.
All right, so before we get into this game, I wanted to play some apologizing music, and obviously I was kind of worried about the copyright claim, so we're not going to do that. But Mr. Myles Garrett, I once said, mistakenly, that you were not much better than a combined sum of Carlos Dunlap, Carl Lawson, and Sam Hubbard. Boy, I was wrong. So I apologize about that. But, I seem to recall when we talked at the beginning of the season, I said that the Bengals deserved to be the number one receiving corps in the division, right? Well, let's do an update on who the leading receiver of the AFC North is, because I feel like you guys still aren't giving him enough credit.
Is that Hollywood,
my guy, Mr. Tyler Boyd. Mr. Tyler Boyd. And guess who's number two? Is that Higgins? Yes, it's T. Higgins. It is. And then you got, the A.J. Green guy. He's number seven. Now, the Steelers, I will say, may have a chance to recoup. But just know I said that. And then let's also look at the passing grades. Because when you're 1-6-1, you got to start looking at some of the other stuff. who at this point would have thought that Joe Burrow would lead the AFC North in receiving? I mean, not receiving yards, in passing yards. 2,000 yards. He's got 700 essentially more yards than Baker Mayfield, which is crazy.
Third in the league right now. Yeah.
The positives from this game, Joseph Burrow, the wide receivers. I think the offensive line stepping it up, especially when Jonah Williams went out this game, Trey Hopkins went out this game, and Bobby Hart went out this game. And this was after Myles Garrett already had 2 sacks. I thought Myles Garrett was going to have like 5 after that happened. I was just like, my heart was beating very fast. The good thing, though, I've been very critical of Zach Taylor. This game, he had a great game play calling wise. I couldn't be mad at Zach Taylor. But when I talk about the Bengals coaching, it's not just about Zach Taylor. It's the entire staff. And Quincy was like, well, why were the Bengals doing this and that? 2 words, Lou Anarumu. With this cover one, even though William Jackson III, his best corner, was declared out of the game, he was just like, you know what? I'm going to have my corners press and have no safety help deep. I'm going to have Jesse Bates on the other hash. And I'm going to assume that Von Bell apparently is freaking Ed Reed in coverage, because I'm going to have him man-to-man on David Njoku and all of these tight ends. Like, Von Bell can cover. Von Bell cannot cover like that. And he's small.
Well,
he's
Ace,
like
he
the
was,
size of a corner.
He was thinking, you know, hey, I got William Jackson, but, you know, Odell's out. So, you know, it equals it up. So I can just do what I'm going to normally do. And, you know what I mean?
Also getting some karma for the Josh Bynes love, for sure, because he could not care. He could not guard anybody in this game. There was a ton of mismatches. I think that the – I don't know what Lou was thinking, honestly. I honestly have no idea what he was thinking matchups-wise. To put Josh Bynes, like Sonny said, not athletic, very old, to put him on, you know, receivers like Higgins, like, I'm sorry. It was just not a great game plan. But there also was the issue of when guys were in the game, they weren't able to make plays. You talk about Jermaine Pratt falling down on the Kareem Hunt play to the sideline where he walks in for the touchdown. And for me, it was just like going into this game, I was worried because Odell Beckham Jr. was going to be a problem. William Jackson's out. Joe Mixon isn't there. That's why the Bengals only ran for like 30 yards in this game. I was worried. And it seems like in similar fashion compared to the Indianapolis Colts game, I came out and I said, the only way that the Bengals are going to be in this game is if they force Baker Mayfield to throw turnovers and they capitalize on them and they get up on them and try to turn Baker into a passer. I said the same thing against the Colts and Phillip Rivers. It doesn't matter because this defense is trash. Like, whenever I'm not going to take anything away from Baker. I told you Browns fans last week, you can't move on from Baker. He's your guy right now. You got to stick by him. But goodness, to let Baker Mayfield essentially just have the day that he had and Lou Anarumu face absolutely no punishment, and for it to be drama even later on in the game. Like, a lot of people talk about the pass rush, and that's valid, right? But when you have Geno Atkins, Carlos Dunlap sitting on the sidelines, and you only have Carl Lawson, he can only do so much. And then the other thing is, I don't think people give the Browns offensive line the credit that it deserves. This is one of the top offensive lines in the NFL. Everyone knew that. Like, you're not going to get to Baker Mayfield like that. Like, before this game, and I think right now, currently, in next-gen sets, he ranks number one in time to throw. So this wasn't a guy that you were really going to be able to get a hand on. Now, they did have some plays where they should have, like Quincy talked about. Carl Lawson should have had him. Mackenzie Alexander on that last drive, but we're not going to talk about that. He should have had a sack as well when he threw the blitz in there. But these were good lines. You talk about the Colts, good line. But it's still on the coaching. Like, you can't have a pass rush if your best 2 pass rushers are on the sideline. Geno Atkins and Carlos Dunlap, I believe, 12 snaps. I don't know why Carlos Dunlap was active this game, because literally, like, I think it was that morning or the day before, he posted the depth chart showing that he was 3rd on the depth chart at both defensive end positions and was clearly trying to make a beeline out of Cincinnati. You would essentially expect him to be benched for the game, but Mike Brown was like, nope, hold my beer. We're going to throw Carlos in there. He's going to be active. And not only is he going to be active, we are going to put him in the game. And that was very awkward and very weird, because he kind of did a cheer to the fans. And then he ended up getting called on a play. I think it was like an encroachment or something like that. But it on the replay, apparently on Twitter, people are showing that the Browns offensive lineman actually flinched. But still, it essentially was a free first down. But this game, outside of Joe Burrow, outside of the receivers, T. Higgins stepped it up. A.J. Green had another solid game again. The demise of A.J. Green has been greatly over-exaggerated. He was there. You know, you just thought that the Bengals would finally put it together. I have to also give some credit to Giovanni Bernard.
The way that he played in pass protection, the way that he played coming out of the backfield, he definitely was a key guy in this game. But the Bengals got no help on defense. They got absolutely no help on defense outside of the Darius Phillips interception, not from a coaching perspective, not from a pass rush perspective. And the only thing that you can hope for is, you know that you got Joe Burrow. You know that he's an amazing quarterback. Threw for 400 yards in this game, 35 of 47, four total touchdowns, one interception. I think, if I'm not mistaken, he may have already tied Andrew Luck's rookie record right now in terms of that, and he's on pace to easily break that. But this guy's amazing. He's amazing, and I don't think we've seen anything like him. And, you know, at this point, you just have to hope that you get good games and good play out of Joe Burrow. You got to hope that some things work out for this offensive line. One good thing is that Quentin Spain did take a visit to Cincinnati. He's expected to sign there. So that's actually some good news. But you got to take what you can get. And the Bengals lost. I called it as a loss. Didn't want to, but that's what happened. When Baker Mayfield was throwing last-minute touchdown. And that play happened twice. I did a film review earlier. Similar plays, similar calls. Cover one. Bring the corners up, no safety help over the top. That literally on that last drive worked for the Browns. I almost want to say it might have been Quincy, if I'm not mistaken, back-to-back plays where it was just like, we're going to deep ball. All right, they're going to play it again. All right, we're going to do it again. And this time we're going to win the ball game. So when it comes down to coaching, the Bengals have to work there. Zach Taylor, hell of a game offensively. The fact that he let Lou Anarumu off the hook as a friend, very concerning. But let's hope that the Bengals can do something this season. But I think we all are happy about Joe Burrow, so I won't be too negative on it.
Yeah, that's another thing I wanted to mention real quick. They went into a cover zero at the end of that game that allowed the Rashard Higgins. Like, that's how Rashard Higgins got one-on-one.
And give him credit for at least changing defense. They were in cover one, like, the entire game. So give him credit for actually changing. You know what I mean?
They got that one interception. It was like, oh, yeah, this is the right defense. 0-5. Yeah, we ain't changing nothing.
Like, nah, we don't need William Jackson. Yeah,
yeah. We're good. We're good. We're good. Fine. Yeah. All right, we got a couple super chats here. We got one from Ray. Why does Baker continue to be a frustrated quarterback? At least he finally stepped up and took command. Also, how will he keep taking the steps to be better?
Quincy? I mean, he continues to be a frustrating quarterback because, you know, the reality, if you don't draft Patrick Mahomes or Lamar Jackson, your young or Joe Burrow, your young quarterback's going to frustrate you. That is the reality of it. And it is a growing process and it's not fun. And hopefully it ends up the right way. This could go one or two ways. He could be Blake Bortles, or he could, you know, be what Ben, who took a few years to develop, or Ryan Tannehill, who took a few years to develop, or it could be one of those two things. You know, he's not a MVP caliber player. Those guys hatch quick. Other guys, the guys in between, they take a little while.
We got one more from the Trib. Time to trade the disgruntled bets on the Bengals. We've heard a lot about this, trading them. I don't know that there's a lot of value out there for those guys. And I think if the Bengals want any sort of value, well, they're not going to get it. So I think that's why they're probably not going to make a bunch of trades.
I'll give you a 2022 fifth for John Ross III right here, right now.
All right, before we go to Sonny, I just want to say my piece on this game. We'll keep it short because we are running long here. I'm going to duck while I say this so Browns fans don't throw anything at me. I think Joe Burrow had as good a game, if not better, than Baker Mayfield did. So here's the thing about Joe Burrow in this game. He had no offensive line. Trey Hopkins and Jonah Williams both went down with injury. They played 40% of their snaps. No Joe Mixon in this game, right? So they're going with Giovanni Bernard, who ran for what was like 2-3 yards a carry. Miles Garrett is all over, you know, it was all over Burrow early. 14 pressures for the Browns in this game. And yet, Joe Burrow stood tall the entire game. The drive chart, I don't know if you guys have seen the drive chart for this game. It's just funny. It's just touchdown, 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 touchdown.
Yeah, this is back and forth.
It's incredible. It's incredible. And for Burrow to be doing that at this point, I'm so impressed with him. Now, obviously, I'm not trying to downplay what Baker did. What Baker did was also very impressive, and he did lose OBJ in this game. But he does have a much better – I saw people in the chat, Steeler fans in the chat, trying to say, why did the Bengals have so much trouble rushing the passer when the Steelers didn't? Steelers fans, we have the best front seven in the league, and it's not even close. Like, it's incredible. So I think that's why.
We could do it. Why can't opposite. Y'all?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, has the Steelers pass rush 1. Bengals are 32.
Yeah, and it shows. So I you know, give credit to Baker, but remember, he has a great offensive line. I mean, the Bengals couldn't get any pressure. No pressure. I know that they're fighting with Carlos Dunlap and whatnot, but they got nothing to speak for as far as the pass rush goes at this point. Baker was great, though. I apologize. I take everything back. I said, Baker, you know, you are closer to Jimmy Garoppolo and closer to above Jimmy Garoppolo and Jared Goff than I thought. But we'll see. We'll see. I'm not a one-game sample size guy. All right. That was my thoughts on the game. We're running long here. Sonny, your thoughts on Bengals-Browns? Oh, you're muted.
Sorry. I actually agree with Tony here, the saying that Burrow was impressive because as A said, as soon as the O-line went off, I was like, this dude is about to get murdered. And he held his own. He played well. And it was there was no defense showing up in this game. It was just touchdown, 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 as you guys said. Look, Baker win and play at the end of the game as impressive as you want your quarterback to be. Those throws weren't easy. Both throws weren't easy. The touchdown to DPJ and the pass to Higgins also on the sideline. Both throws were impressive. They were good. He was poised. He delivered. It was a dime. Couldn't throw it any better than that for that particular play. And let me say this too. Myles Garrett, at this point, is the best outside linebacker, edge rusher, whatever you want to call him. He is doing his best impression of, I don't know, for those who follow basketball. No. For those who follow basketball, Tyson Chandler. Remember Tyson Chandler playing for the Knicks? And he said, and he won Defensive Player of the Year. And he said, I have to thank my team for being so trash. That's what Myles Garrett is looking like. Dude, I had the best graded because I had to go through three people to even get a pressure, not get along a sack, because all these jokers are doing nothing here. They're getting one-on-one, and they cannot beat their guys, even the, as Quincy would say, even the backup of the guy. So, Myles Garrett, dude, you are the GOAT right now of the edge in the NFL. Look,
he's right there. He has no help.
It's the Giannis argument.
We see how well that worked out.
To round out this argument, this was a game for me that it was a must-win for the Browns. The Browns couldn't lose this game because not because of 4-3, but now you're 4-3, 0-3 in the AFC. You didn't want to do that. This is a game, as the Bengals, they are a hard team to beat, but they're a team that you have to win. You look at your schedule, you see that, you're like, that is a team that you have to win. So overall, I think both teams should come out saying like, hey, we performed well. For the Browns, we took the win. For the Bengals, hey, we have some building blocks on defense. They have a lot of things to do on offense. A lot of good, especially with a bad O-line. Props to them.
All right, real quick before we get to the super chat, I thought of something interesting. The Browns defense, if you think of like the Denzel Ward and Myles Garrett as one person, is much like Kobe Bryant on the 08 Lakers. Like the rest of that defense is just like, yo, Smush Parker, you going to do something? You know what I mean? Like it's really nothing else.
I don't like you talking about my guy Larry Ogunjobi like that. How dare you?
Larry Ogunjobi did absolute Duke against what? Fred the Sled Johnson's backup? Billy Price was in there at one point. Billy Price. They had two good offensive linemen and they were both out. Miles is out here swim moving three consecutive people just to get a pressure. And Larry Ogunjobi's just sitting there locked up with Billy Price. Like, that's an acceptable excuse not to be in a backfield. Come on. Where was Larry Ogunjobi before this injury? He was balling. But this Larry Ogunjobi, that's not balling. That's not balling at all. That's Smush Parker at the three-point line. Like, let him shoot, baby. But let's get to the super chat.
All right, the super chat. Josh writes in, Ravens will trade Boykins for Higgins or Boyd, which no, that won't happen.
I bet they will not for sale. All right, Josh, well, appreciate the super chat though, bro.
Appreciate it. All right, that is gonna do it for us here. Thank you all for watching and listening. We have 233 people in watching the video live right now, only 142 likes. So we can get that a little higher, that we can get to 150 by the time we end this thing here. Want to let everybody know you can find this podcast. You can find this on YouTube, of course, 5:45 on Tuesdays and Thursdays. We do a review show on Tuesdays. Our preview show this week will be on Thursday. You don't want to miss that one. That is going to be Steelers versus Ravens, 6-0, 5-1. The AFC North at stake, potentially. Early in the year. It's week 7, but the AFC North may be at stake. We'll talk about that. Before we do, Ace, let people know where they can find your work.
You can find me on Twitter at New Stripe City, and you can also find me sending an email on the Bengals front office with the subject line "Cover One." That's where you can find me. You can also find me here on AFC North Talk. Please hit that subscribe button.
You need to send it with Cover Two. I don't think they know what that is right now. I think they forgot what Cover Two, Cover Three.
God forget Cover Four. You know what I mean? Cover
Four. You can do these things. Yeah,
God forbid quarters.
Yeah. They want to get real crazy. They can do some Cover Six stuff. I mean, hey, there's a lot of crazy. All right, Quincy, where can people find your work?
You can find me on youtube.com/QuincyCarey. You can also find me on Twitter. You can also find me on Twitch. You can also find me on Flick. You can find me a very, very wide array of different places. Just find me on YouTube. All the links are going to be in the description in my video. So check it out there. Also, you can find me on this Baker Mayfield train, baby. We about to choo-choo this one straight to the bye week, baby. Baker Mayfield, red zone Baker, best red zone quarterback in the NFL right now. Russell Wilson out here throwing red zone interceptions. He's a bum. Ben Roethlisberger out here throwing red zone interceptions. He's a bum. He's washed. He ain't got it. No, I'm just playing. I take it all back. These are all good quarterbacks.
I'm fine with all the Ben hate. Oh, whoa. We got
$40. Let's make a train. We're taking tickets on the Baker train. Chicka, chicka, choo, choo.
Will he ever throw an incomplete pass again? I don't know. He's throwing 22 straight.
Hey. Is Baker going to come to this?
Oh God!
You said what?
Hey, the MVP race is coming back, Quincy, because Ryan Tannehill is taking on the Bengals. That MVP talk is about to tick up.
Oh yeah, we all know the MVP race runs through Cincinnati. Like that's where you get ordained into your MVP talks. It's where Lamar Jackson solidified his case. Like if Lamar Jackson doesn't hit that spin move on whatever poor soul tried to tackle him that day, I promise you he has a harder time winning a unanimous MVP. But in order to win the MVP, you have to embarrass Cincinnati. Baker, he's not an MVP candidate in any nation. Like that's not.
Ryan Tannehill probably watched the tape and was like, they just play Cover One. That's an easy game plan.
Yeah.
Ryan Tannehill, like, bro, I'm about to get 100 yards on the ground. I'm about to get 400 through the air. AJ Brown, like, yeah, bro, I got it. They about to put me one-on-one with Darius Phillips. What?
If the Bengals run Cover One all game like they did to Baker to try and shut down Derrick Henry, they're going to give up like 600 yards to Tannehill.
Here's the concerning thing. That was
their disaster.
Here's the concerning thing. You have to think their game plan is going to be the same.
I agree.
Except for that one's better. So like, they'll do the Bengal thing though. They'll come out ahead in the first half. They'll put up some points early. And then Ryan Tannehill will put together 40 straight completions to end the game and solidify his case for MVP. And I'll be pulling my hair out on the Tuesday show. Well, Monday show that week, right?
That's right.
So Monday show that week. That's next week.
Next week. We're going to be Monday. Monday.
Right. We're going to be Monday, so we don't run into Election Day. We'll do this on Monday night before the Monday Night Football game. So you'll
this is our... why you have to hit that reminder.
Notification,
right?
Bro.
Hit the notification, absolutely. Subscribe to the channel. By the way, thank you to everyone who liked the video. We are over 160 now by my count. So thank you to everyone who's liked the video. Sonny, let people know they can find your work.
Hey, SCG Sport Area, Facebook, IG, YouTube. And by the way, my guys, I know a couple of you guys have come to me like, hey, you haven't posted. Yeah, my internet's crap. And here the guys are running behind the scene, everything. That's why I can just, you know, jump in. But soon, thank God, I'm going to upgrade my internet. So I should be back to posting more and going live. So
what's going to happen first? Is Sonny's internet going to get fixed or are the Bengals going to win? I think
maybe going to lose. It's a tough one. That's a tough one.
No, it's going to lose next week.
A tough one.
Or will Baker throw an incompletion? You know,
what will the Steelers actually lose? Will they be 16? Maybe that's all right. That's going to do it for us. Thank you all for watching and listening. Again, as I said, you can find this in podcast form or you can watch this thing live on YouTube Tuesdays and Thursdays, 5:45 p.m. Eastern time. We'll be back on Thursday to preview biggest game of the year. I mean, this is Steelers Ravens. This is for everything. 5-1, 6-0, huge matchup. We'll talk about it on Thursday. Talk to you then.